Hello, everyone, and welcome to How This Brokerage Firm Sustained Growth Through the Pandemic, our second podcast episode in the GlobeStreet.com Thought Leadership Series of articles and podcasts with Matthews Real Estate Investment Services. In this episode, we join Kyle Matthews, the CEO and chairman of Matthews, in conversation with Kelsey Marie Borland on how to build a successful commercial real estate brokerage firm in spite of the pandemic and what the secret is to their meteoric rise in their 6 years of existence. Let's join them.
Kyle, thank you so much for joining me.
Thanks for having me.
So you launched Matthews Real Estate Investment Services in 2015, and since then you have grown the firm to more than 400 agents with 13 offices and markets across the U.S. We have seen other brokerage firms also launched recently, but you guys have found really rapid success. Why do you think that is?
The culture to start. I mean, from day one, we all agreed that we're going to really have two defining features about the company cultures, and I'll list them both. I'll kind of dive into each one. So the first, simply put, we're going to work harder than anyone else. And second, we're going to have more fun than anyone else. So the first part of that, the work hard part, you know, we have a saying here, the best way to beat your competition is to wake up before them. So generally speaking, if you were to walk into a Matthews office anywhere across the country, there's very much a consistency of culture, which is really been a focus of ours. But compared to other brokerage offices that I was able to work in early in my career, there's an intensity to the work ethic, and it creates a palpable energy in all of our offices. One of the reasons we love to get clients into the office is we know they're going to walk in and they're going to be blown away. It's like an energy you could cut with a knife, and they comment on it. You know, one of the things about that type of culture, we can all agree that no matter how self-motivated and disciplined an individual is, some more than others, you know, admittedly, everyone's going to have days, I do, where they wake up and you just don't have it. And that's where the environment of a Matthews office lifts people in general, everyone who steps in there to perform their activities or execute their assignments to the absolute best of their abilities. Again, even on days where perhaps when they woke up, the mindset wasn't as locked in as they would have liked it to been. So, you know, that's kind of the work hard part, the play hard part, the fun part. It really is us as a company recognizing the stress and anxiety that comes with commercial real estate brokerage. You know, early on, like as a real estate broker, you're working 80 to 100 hours a week. You're non-salaried. And early on in the career, when you don't have much of any business, young agents carry that mentally and emotionally, that weight throughout the day. The psychological effects, the doubts, the fears, the worries, it weighs on people, especially young agents who have not proven, not only to the market, but even more importantly to themselves, they have not yet proven that they'll be successful. And you juxtapose that with an established senior agent, likely producing, you know, candidly, millions of dollars of fee in a year. So they no longer have the concern of money and success, but their stress and anxiety is just as present. It's just as real as when they first got in the business. Their mental, emotional challenges lie in the pressure of performance and execution assignments. They are winning, making sure they follow through for their client. And oftentimes that client is no longer just a client. It's evolved into a genuine friendship. It has multi-million dollar consequences if you make a mistake. So again, while a junior agent's concerns are rooted in surviving and just establishing their ability to be successful, once established, it's not like the worries, the fears, the concerns, those emotions that keep you up at night, they don't just go away, they change. So that is why we place so much emphasis on having fun at Matthews. It's because for us, it's like a coping mechanism, right? A welcome distraction to the pressure that high-performing people place on themselves every day to be the best version of themselves. Like, you know, playing football in college at USC, 2000-2004, I had the benefit of watching internally. I was on the team, a high-performance program, the number one team in the country for many years. And ultimately watching Pete Carroll manage that pressure. He managed it not only by reducing the stress or the work ethic, the intensity at which we approach practice and preparation. No, I mean, can't, to the contrary, that increased. Like, we got after it all the time. But what he did was to make sure that we didn't succumb to the pressure of living up to this, you know, number one ranking and the 35 game win streak or whatever it was, is we had a crazy amount of fun. And so for us, fun comes in many forms. So generally it's crazy sales competitions with wild prizes, it's office banter. And, you know, generally our agents spend a lot of time outside the office together. That was not an experience I had at companies I, you know, kind of grew up at. You might have three or four buddies in the office, but generally speaking, your office coworkers were just that. They were just coworkers, not necessarily some of the best relationships you had, and not just your professional, but your personal lives at Matthews. The answer to your question is, you know, why has Matthews found such rapid success? First, we outwork everyone. I mean, full stop. Like, we get after it. The agent specs expectations are very well managed when starting in the business. Long hours, working weekends, front loading your career. Most people understand the concept of like compound interest, okay? But that also applies to the compounding nature of delayed gratification. So the longer you delay or push off the gratification or the rewards of the work you've put in, all right, the more the rewards compound. And we really coach our agents up to understand just how much mental discipline is required to not only find success in the business, but to maintain and continue to grow that success. And obviously the second is we have a great time, all right? And people look forward to coming into the office. People at the company, you know, they kind of step in. They never know what type of amusement will be presented to them throughout the day. But when it does, it tends to bring like levity and joy to an agent who professionally has chosen a career that, in my experience, carries a tremendous amount of upside economically, no doubt. But especially early on, it can also carry lots of anxiety and stress and worry.
Absolutely. And so the culture is clearly the impetus for you to start this company. And clearly that's been the reason for your rapid success. But I'm curious if you knew, if you could go back to 2015, if you kind of knew you would be here today, or what those initial growth goals were. What was your kind of growth strategy walking in?
My goal when founding the company was to make more money than I spent, right? And so there wasn't much strategy. I just thought there was an opportunity to run the business a little more efficiently than it was at some of the big public brokerage companies I had worked at. It wasn't to grow Matthews into the size and force it is today. That just happened. I'll give you a tangible example. I moved out of California to Nashville about 3.5 years ago, and it was maybe 6 months ago. I opened it up as like some of my office effects from my previous office out in Cali. And there was my notes from 2015, my business notes. I just happened to turn to a page. It was March 2015, so about a month before Matthews was formally founded. And it said, in 5 years, we're going to have 2 offices and 60 agents. Keep in mind, this is like a visioning exercise that I likely did, which is typically you're almost overstating your blue sky scenario. Like, man, imagine having 2 offices and 60 agents. Like, that's crazy. Well, 5 years after we founded Matthews, we probably had, roughly speaking, 300 agents, 10 offices. And I think we have, 415 offices now. So that just goes to show you in writing that the expectations, the vision, the strategy in no way, was what it has become. It's just we wake up every day and put one foot forward in front of the other. We just try and do it a little bit better than it's ever been done before. And the market has been very kind to us. Really, if you look at since coming out of really 2010, we've been in a 11-year bull market minus about 3 to 6 months, depending on product type during COVID. And so, that obviously makes a lot of people look smart. Time will tell. But yeah, I guess the question, the question was, what was the initial growth strategy? Was just make a little bit more money and bring on good people when they presented itself. And it kind of took on a life of its own.
So what are the essential elements to build a successful real estate brokerage firm?
There's a lot to unpack in that question. So I'll distill it down into 3 things. Okay. So the first I already covered, the culture. I don't see how you start a new brokerage company without being maniacally committed to outworking everyone else. All right. So in no other industry, whether it be finance, hospitality, consumer products, a local restaurant, let's call it, would a person say to themselves, I'm going to start a business, but I don't plan on altering in any way how much time I invest in the business. Starting a business is not compatible, in my opinion, with like the concept of work-life balance. It's quite the contrary. My experience was early on in the business, they're almost mutually exclusive. So most business owners, I don't think realize that, they don't realize that concept. They're like, okay, I'm going to start a business, but my life isn't going to change. Like that's not going to happen. Your life's going to change drastically if you want the business to be successful. So they go in with this mismanaged expectation, then let's call it a year and it gets really hard. They're working longer hours, they're sacrificing more than they signed up for, especially time at home if you have a family. And eventually they say to themselves like, well, the juice isn't worth the squeeze. So, again, to start, in my opinion, in order to be successful, the business, the launch of a business or a new company, it can't be a job. It has to be like a lifestyle. So it has to be, in a sense, the most important thing in your life. So that 5 to 10 years in, the success of the business will then allow you to spend your time on what really are the most important things of your life, which for most of us, you know, family, friends, philanthropy, mental, physical health, whatever it is. It's just going in, it has to be your total focus. All right. So second, you know, which if followed up, in my opinion, allows for the third part, and I'll get to that in a second. But the second is the founder or the founding group. It's their willingness to reinvest proceeds and profits back in the company. Okay. So, and this is very specific. So the biggest reason, in my opinion, most other boutiques and brokerage are still boutiques if they make it at all. But let's talk about boutiques that are still boutiques. The reason the companies remain boutiques isn't because the founder or CEO says they want it to. That's generally not true. Like you go to a founder of a company and say, hey, in 15 years, when you start your company, it could be worth 15 million or 500 million. Which one do you choose? They're going to say, well, 500 million. And anyone who says otherwise is probably not being honest with you or even not being honest with themselves. The real reason they're still a boutique is because when their company makes profit, which most of them do, oftentimes in year one, they sweep most of the cash and they put in their personal accounts. All right. They leave a little operating cash left over so they can maintain payroll, keep paying bills, whatever, provide basic services. But generally, they sweep most of the cash and then they personally invest it. They buy real estate, they buy buildings, they buy stocks, they buy a bigger house, they buy a vacation home, whatever. As it's just they aren't investing it in the company's expansion. All right. So generally speaking, they're not investing it in more technology to help their agents market properties. They're not investing in more platform personnel to turn around agents, you know, BOVs and OMs faster and make them look of a higher quality. They aren't opening new offices. They aren't recruiting senior talent. It takes serious mental discipline for a founder or someone operating any business in any industry to see that business is successful. It produces significant amounts of net income and then say to themselves or the owners, the group, the partners say, hey, we aren't going to take this. We're not going to touch it. We're going to invest all of this back into the company. We're going to hire more junior agents. We're going to open new offices. We're going to subscribe to better technology service. We're going to improve the size and talent of our analyst pool. We're going to increase marketing spend and brand awareness. We're going to triple the size of our research department and so on. This is like the single biggest reason I see dozens and dozens of boutiques. Matthews has been around for 6.5 years. Like, you know, there's companies much smaller than us now that have been around 25 years. And when I, you know, when I get to know these people or I dive in or I talk to people at the company, the biggest reason is why they're one or two offices still is not because they don't want their company to be more successful and be bigger and be more profitable. Or maybe even take it public one day. It's because the cash sweep and they invest in their personal portfolios and they don't invest it back in the company. The last is just agent support, right? So, you know, essential elements to build a successful brokerage company. You can't have a successful brokerage company without successful brokers. And what makes successful brokers? It's support, right? And most companies don't want to risk or the perceived risk of headcount and platform personnel. They would rather, in my opinion, give an agent, I had this experience as an agent, give an agent a higher split, a slightly higher split, and say, well, you go figure it out. If you need to support, you hire it. If you need to an analyst, you go find one. If you need a marketing person, you go put that job description out. And you interview and you onboard and you train and you manage and you review and you bonus and you know, whatever. It's just, they don't want it. The problem with that is really, it isn't the math or the economics to the company or to the agent, because that tends to even itself out. Like when you factor in the money an agent needs to spend to build themselves, the support team around them at a higher split, no support company. So it's not the math is a benefit one way or the other. The margins are kind of the same. It's really the time and the time an agent has to spend managing people. That's where they get crushed. And so 99% of non-brokerage activity, we take off the plate and we just want them to focus on building relationships, having conversations with active owners, you know, executing transactions and assignments. So, you know, the question, what are the essential elements? I touched on culture, right? All right. So second is the founding fathers, you know, they need to reinvest the proceeds and the income back in the business to accelerate its growth. And last is you have to have support personnel for the agents so that they can go out and do hopefully what they do best.
That's great. And I think that kind of last piece is so important to the conversation about a brokerage company specifically, because the other two are, you know, culture and core business fundamentals, I think would be true kind of across businesses, right? Across industries, but really understanding the way the brokerage company works or the brokerage business works and supporting those brokers is kind of key, I think, here. Well, let's talk about the market, though. So you brought that up. I think that's an interesting point. So a lot of people, kind of veterans in the industry, would say, you know, you can be successful until you can't be successful in this industry, right? And I think a lot of that is about going through your kind of first market cycle. You have done that now, right? You've gone through this kind of first dislocation. And it was really a whopper of a dislocation, right? A total black swan event, something you couldn't see coming. I'm curious how that has impacted your firm, how that's impacted your strategy now that you've kind of had to go through a stormy period.
I recognize, I mean, yes, agree, it was a black swan event. And I recognize the uniqueness of COVID and the effect it, I mean, in every facet of our life, right? But, you know, let's just talk real estate and commercial real estate. It's not that I disagree with you. I went through the great financial crisis 2008 to 2010, let's call it. And that was much more brutal and painful and worse than COVID. Not to make light of anyone's negative impact COVID had on them personally and professionally. I still feel like perhaps we haven't been through a full dislocation, because yes, there was like 90 days when COVID hit. I mean, it was probably darker than any day during the great financial crisis, but then it came back so fast and so strong. Debt was insanely cheap and available. There was a flight to safety coming out of like the worst days in COVID, and American real estate, you know, high credit net lease, retail, multifamily, industrial, which are, you know, some of our biggest focuses, like were the benefactors. So I'll answer the question in a sense, like, how did it impact us, or how has it impacted us? The good news is, we had been saving cash, and I could touch on this later. We've been saving cash since the day we found it. And we had a nice war chest saved up in the event of something bad happening. And then this happened, and it put us in a position where we didn't lay off one single worker. We didn't furlough one single worker. And we had a plan, I think it was 2020, to hire 75 agents. And we had such a flood of resume, because most of our peer group canceled their internships as well as rescinded job offers. And you had a bunch of people who had just come out of college, like, you know, spring 2020, that are the talent of people, you know, raising their hand saying, hey, I'd love to, I still want to be in real estate. I still want to be in brokerage. I feel like Matthews was the only company hiring. We ended up hiring about 150 agents. And so it was a little bit of a risk, but we were able to do that, not, you know, eliminate quote unquote headcount, because we had saved cash. We had made the right decision financially. And at the same time, took a little bit of a leap of faith to actually accelerate our hiring of agents who in the first year or two, it's not like they produce much revenue. And so that was a big deal. And then 2021 market came back strong, and we just were in a perfect position to kind of fly to the moon there. And we had an incredible year. So, you know, it was a major economic dislocation, not for a, you know, tremendous amount of time. And there's so much stimulus flooded the economy that, you know, I think everyone's been benefiting, us included, but it didn't necessarily, like, I mean, it impacted the firm. There were a lot of sleepless nights, and especially early on, it was like, okay, I'm not going to fire or furlough anyone until we literally like, well, what if we start running out of money? Cause for a minute there, it wasn't looking, the market was like, this could be years, right? But, you know, fortune was kind, and we didn't ever have to get there. And it actually put us in a better position moving forward. If anything, it just reinforced a lot of the decisions we were making of like always making sure, you know, you have a lot of cash on hand. We have no debt. We've never taken outside money. It just, you know, as a company, it kind of put us in a position to, while we weren't, it's not that we weren't affected and it didn't hurt, but we were able to kind of not have to veer that far off course.
Yeah, absolutely. And so that kind of, you know, rainy day fund, or the you know, strong balance sheet that you had kind of coming into this at least period of uncertainty really allowed you to not have to pivot in a way that we saw other brokerage firms do, at least in that kind of initial 8 months in 2020. And so now that we're out of it, because I agree with you, it was short-lived. And I think in a lot of ways, you know, some people came out ahead here, right? And there has really been a swift rebound in a lot of asset classes. I don't know if that's true across the board, but I think kind of overarchingly, that is the narrative. So what is now your growth strategy today? Are you still on course? Have you ramped up expansion expectations? Where are you guys headed?
Yeah, great question. What is the growth strategy today? I'll give you a better answer than I'm going to start with. It's kind of more of the same. It's continuing to reinvest, you know, the profits the company generates in providing agents better support and technologies, a better platform to, you know, turn around BOVs and OMs and higher quality aesthetics faster. There's certainly a facilities expansion, because, you know, while net lease product you can do from anywhere in the country, the local market product, which is what we really, really are experiencing a lot of success, local multifamily, industrial, retail, things like that. You have to be in the market. So, you know, I'm here in Nashville, multifamily, industrial, local retail, like as we open offices in the local markets, like that's going to be continue to focus. Where it gets a little more interesting and perhaps the nature of your question, like maybe how is our growth strategy changing or evolving, is because of, you know, and I say this as humbly as possible, the success we've had, it's put us in a position to potentially accelerate our growth. Maybe perhaps through some M&A options out there where there's, you know, perhaps a team that's just at a company where it's a little misaligned, or a boutique brokerage that, you know, recognizes the opportunity for its agents to, you know, be aligned with a larger platform, but one that for us very much still feels like and operates and kind of has the mentality of that startup boutique, like, which I think when you're at a boutique, you really like that about it. It's not corporate. It's not bureaucratic. There's not like 800 committees you got to go through to get an answer for a simple question. That's definitely not Matthews. Like, it's the flattest organization on the planet, but it still kind of punches at a heavyweights class. So for the first time in our history, we're starting to have those conversations. Additional products and service lines, obviously debt origination is a big focus of ours, equity and capital raising, but, you know, looking at even complementary fee-based things. So as property insurance, you know, debt servicing, appraisal, just, you know, starting to expand our horizon in, you know, what is our, where we want to take this is, you know, kind of one of the world's largest full service real estate investment banks.
That concludes this episode brought to you by Matthews Real Estate Investment Services and hosted on Globestreet.com. Thanks for listening. For the latest news and insights on commercial real estate, go to www.globestreet.com.